Till they have to put my foot down. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me as always is Max. We are in the brand new Pre-Dead Lodge. It's the lodge.
You put your feet up.
Yeah.
Baby.
Put the feet up.
Make this thing creak so you can't actually put your feet up.
Yeah, Max is now living in his new apartment that he's going to be sharing with his betrothed. And we're recording in your bedroom. Which is freaking me out and hopefully won't be a trend.
No, I won't be a trend once we get the other room set up.
So. Oh, sick. So the lodge will have a studio of sorts.
Yeah. Or we can just record in the weird communicating closet.
Yeah, the shared closet with the other bedroom.
Yeah. It's like a hotel. I like it.
You liking the new place?
Yeah, it's nice. It's all brick, so it insulates sound really well. There's a beagle that lives two homes over. And it's very loud, and it barks all the time, and it's very old.
That sounds kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
I love beagles, but they are noisy.
Yes. But other than that, it's great. The ceilings are like 15 feet tall everywhere.
Room to grow.
Which is very silly. I'm going to be a very tall boy by the end of this.
It's like a goldfish rule. Just the bigger the tank is, the more you'll grow to fit it.
Well, I'm only 6 feet tall when I live in a place with 10-foot ceilings.
Yeah. So, by that math, you'll be 10 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Soon.
I also ate a bunch of sorbet before you came over. And I've lived my whole life without realizing that, like, sorbet has milk in it.
Does it really?
Yeah.
I thought that was supposed to be milkless.
Sherbet? Is it sherbet? What is it?
Sherbet is, there's no dairy in that. But I thought sorbet was, too. Pardon us while we... do Google. Our research here on this research-driven podcast. Get you the facts about sorbet.
Sherbet has a little cream and milk.
Okay.
Sherbet.
But sorbet?
Has no.
Sorbet is dairy-free.
Sorbet is dairy-free. Sherbet, which I ate a lot of, does have milk in it. So we'll see how this goes.
Okay.
We'll see if I get tummy troubles.
Well, before you shit yourself on on the air on this podcast... we should get into our topic of the day.
Should record this podcast.
Yeah, so you've got something death-related for us here.
I do. We're going to be dipping a little back more into the science about death. We're not doing the fun graveyard tour. But ironically, that's a very good segue as we're talking about kind of things squeezing out of intestines and rectal cavities, because we will be talking about that today. Because today, we are going to be talking about embalming.
Oh, so there's some butt stuff in this one.
Yeah, you got to squeeze some fluids out, and you got to squeeze some waste products out.
Okay. So I guess the explicit warning on our podcast is definitely warranted for this episode.
I tried to avoid talking about a lot of that, but now that we've kind of broken the seal, we're going to have to. Speaking of breaking the seal, maybe we should... build up some of our own liquid reservoir.
This is disgusting.
It's the worst intro we've ever done. I couldn't think it got, didn't think it could ever get worse than last week.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Nasty boys.
So let's inaugurate the new studio.
Woo!
Crack into the moment with the Pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment, brought to you by Polar.
Cranberry lime. This is one of my faves from them.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Is this a LaCroix deal? Yeah, nice.
It's from LaCroix?
No, I wanted to see if it had, like, aspartame in it or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, like the time that you deceived me with fruition from Giant Eagle? Never forget.
Embalming! So, Dorian, Give me a definition of embalming off the top of your head. What is embalming?
Well, you know how the natural way of things since the dawn of time has been if a living organism dies, it starts to decay, starts to become just, you know, matter for the earth to kind of continue its natural processes. Embalming is basically like you say, fuck all that, and you pump a bunch of chemicals into someone to make sure that they don't decay, and you, in a desperate attempt to try to keep them alive, even though they are already dead, you preserve their body that way. That's my hot take on it.
No, you nailed it, and I think that's kind of the take that we're going to be working from for a lot of this episode. Honestly, until I started researching this, I thought that embalming was exclusively like injecting formaldehyde into a body. I thought that was all it was. But it's not really exactly that. In the purest sense, embalming is the art and the science of taking a dead body and preserving it with like a chemical or foreign agent of some sort. It's kind of like assisted mummification.
Okay.
Embalming is the process of helping that along with chemicals.
Okay. So you're already kind of poking a hole in my hot take in that there's natural ways for a body or organic material to be preserved.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you completely, and we're going to get there.
Cool. I'm going to stay livid then.
Yeah, stay livid, because the biggest thing here is that mummification can preserve a body indefinitely through completely natural means, whereas embalming only slows the natural decomposition process. So, the ancient Egyptians actually kind of had a leg up on everyone else when it came to embalming, since they lived in a place that had very little moisture, the desert. They also lucked out by living next to a lot of soda lakes.
Soda lakes?
Soda lakes. You've ever seen them?
No, what is that?
So it's like a lake where sodium bicarbonate, kind of like a baking soda type substance, is formed. There's a couple of famous photos online of like an eagle perched on a branch, and it just looks like a rotted, mummified corpse of an eagle.
Hmm.
I'll show you photos later. They look sick.
Okay.
But the ancient Egyptians lived next to a lot of these soda lakes. And the lakes produce a salt-like compound known as natron. So the ancient Egyptians dangled their toes in the embalming scene using natron.
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 Isn't that the bad guy in Avengers?
Avengers Age of Natron?
Yes.
So Dorian, how about you kind of describe the process here of how the ancient Egyptians would half mummify and half embalm bodies?
With pleasure. Like in the mummification process, Egyptian priests would first remove the organs from the body of the deceased. They would then drain the blood from the body in order to get the corpse as dry as possible, since liquids are the enemy of preservation. Once the body had been emptied, drained, and dried, they would cover the body in natron and rub the substance in, drawing more and more moisture from the corpse. Once the body was completely dehydrated, it was entombed and laid to rest.
So basically what they were doing was dry curing people.
Hmm. Like a salami.
Like people jerky. And, you know, it might sound gross, but like we talked about in our mummification episode, this option was a lot better than just having people rotting everywhere and jackals coming around and digging people up.
Right.
And, like, eating bodies. You don't want that. And it was more than just the Egyptians that practiced these early embalming methods. Do you remember when we talked about shrunken heads?
Yes.
So the Hebrew people who made the shrunken heads, they would rub salt, sand, and charcoal into the heads to dry them out.
Right.
That's also roughly a version of embalming. Because, as we stated earlier, embalming is using natural or chemical compounds to preserve a body. People around China were also experimenting with embalming about this time. So check out this photo of the body of Xin Cui.
It's oh, what happened to his face?
Her face.
Her face. What happened to her face?
She's been embalmed for a while. And it doesn't look great. She's kind of rough to look at.
The jerky comparison was apt. I'll just leave it at that.
So, Sin Sui was like a mid-level ruler, like a chancellor of a part of an ancient Chinese empire. And this body, you know, if you look at the photo, it looks kind of rough. Like her face is kind of mashed up or something.
It makes sense, though, now that I think about it. In the Star Wars series of films, Chancellor Palpatine, you know, he looks like a normal, just kind of older human dude.
Uh-huh.
What happens to him when he becomes Emperor Palpatine? He looks exactly like this woman, all wrinkly and pasty. Same thing, right?
Same exact thing, right? It's a similar thing. Sin Sui died in 163 BC.
Okay, a long time ago. Would you say that China is, in a sense, very far away?
It's very far away.
Yeah, far, far away.
Oh my god, come on.
No? Is this a stretch?
That is pretty funny. I was hoping it would kind of hit you a little harder, realizing that this woman's body is over 2,000 years old.
Oh, fuck. That's crazy, actually.
Right? Because it looks rough, and then you go, oh, wait, this woman's body is over 2,000 years old, and it's pretty well preserved.
It looks gnarly as hell, but still kind of juicy.
Yeah. So she died in 163 BC. She wasn't discovered until 1968. And again, she's not mummified. This is all chemicals. So here's a little bit about the discovery of her tomb, which is kind of outrageous.
In 1968, workers digging an air raid shelter for a hospital unearthed an ancient tomb. With the assistance of over 1,500 local high school students, Chinese archaeologists began a large excavation of the site beginning in January 1972. Sin Sui's body was found in a four-layer nested coffin. Her body was remarkably well preserved in an unknown fluid inside the coffin. Her skin was soft and moist, with muscles that still allowed for her arms and legs to flex at the joints. All her organs and blood vessels were also intact, with small amounts of type A blood being found in her veins. There was skin on her face, and her eyelashes and nose hair still exist. Furthermore, a total of 138 melon seeds were found in her stomach, intestines, and esophagus.
Yeah, this is bonkers.
What the fuck? That's insane. Like, there's enough blood that they can tell her blood type.
Uh-huh.
There's tiny hairs still found on it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
2,000 years old.
And, like, when you look at photos of mummies and things like that, they look like if you touched them, they would crumble.
Yeah, they'd blow away.
And her joints still flexed.
That's so crazy.
Even goofier, if you caught this, we don't know what she was preserved in.
Yeah, unknown fluid.
Chemists were able to figure out that it was, quote, mildly acidic with some magnesium in it, but we can't tell anything else beyond that.
So we have no idea what this miracle fluid was.
No, this was just some weird chemical that they cooked up, and somehow it worked better than literally anything else has ever existed at preserving a body.
Seltzer water. That's gotta be it.
It's just coconut oil and seltzer water.
Yeah. No, that's insane. Can I ask what's up with the 138 melon seeds? So clearly she was in the process of digesting something, but that seems like a lot of melon seeds.
It seems like a lot of seeds. I don't know what she was doing. Archaeologists really just used this to tell that she died in the summer when melon was ripe.
Okay, it's in season.
But I guess she liked the seeds a lot. I don't know. That is a lot of seeds.
What kind of pervert was just sitting there eating just straight water? Like, no watermelon for me, thanks. But all those seeds you're spitting out? Yes, please.
I feel like there are maybe like 70 seeds in a whole watermelon. So yeah. This woman must have just been going to town.
She was deliberately trying to get just the seeds from as many people as possible.
This was like her tax as she was chancelloring her kingdom.
Your money's no good here. Only the seeds. Only
seeds.
The seeds must flow.
So after Egypt and some of these early South American and Asian embalmings, embalming kind of went away for about 1,500 years. People just didn't really do it all that often. We just buried people like normal.
Yeah.
You know.
A lot easier.
There wasn't really much of a reason to. A couple European physicians started kind of goofing around with it in the 16th century because they wanted to study anatomy. And it was helpful to have a body around for a longer time instead of just having like 3 days before it started decomposing.
Right.
They didn't really have the right chemical mixture to preserve everything without also destroying everything inside of the body. So it didn't really work all that well. And we're going to talk about some kind of goofy attempts at preservation later in the episode.
Oh boy.
But until then, just know that there's not a lot going on the embalming front for quite a while. But some people were still trying. There was a really famous British Navy guy named Lord Horatio Nelson.
Great name.
Yeah, stellar name. He got shot and killed while the British Navy was fighting in Spain. However, because Nelson was a big boat hero, the British wanted to bury him on British soil. But they were kind of stuck because they were going to have to sail all the way back to Spain, which would take about 2.5 weeks. So here's an account of how they pulled this off.
Lord Nelson's most famous naval engagement at Cape Trafalgar saved Great Britain from threat of invasion by Napoleon Bonaparte. He was killed while leading the attack on the combined French and Spanish fleet, shot by a French sniper during the battle. He died shortly after, becoming one of Britain's greatest war heroes. The fatal wound was documented at the time by the surgeon of HMS Victory, Dr. William Beatty. When the horrified Beatty bent over his stricken commander, he heard the terrible words, "Beatty, you can do nothing for me. I have but a short time to live. My back is shot through." Aware of his fatal injury, Nelson gave Beatty instructions for the care of his family and requested that his body not be thrown overboard. Beatty agreed, and upon his death, interred the corpse in the largest shipboard cask, which was filled with brandy. Thus embalmed, Lord Nelson set off back to England. Beatty's best efforts could only slow the decomposition of Nelson's corpse, however. The body was slowly rotting. 10 days into the journey, gaseous pressures burst the lid of the cask, startling one of the watchmen so much he thought Nelson had returned to life and was trying to climb out. After the Victory finally made port, Beatty removed Nelson's pickled remains from the cask, wrapped them in clean linen, and transferred them to a lead coffin. Although Beatty would later claim the corpse was in perfect condition, both he and the chaplain wrote letters to their higher-ups suggesting the face was by then a little too gruesome for public viewing.
I like this story because it reminds me of William the Conqueror.
Oh, yeah?
Who was that guy that got killed by his horse? And they were trying to bring his body from, like, France to England.
Yep. And he exploded.
He exploded everywhere. This guy just did it in, like, a barrel.
Yeah. I love that he was pickled.
Yeah. I mean, until we had formaldehyde, the best way to preserve something was to put it in alcohol.
To pickle it.
Yeah. Like, a lot of things surrounding death, though, embalming really took off when transportation became easier and war became more violent.
Hmm.
So do you remember how we talked about how photography really took off during the Civil War because soldiers were getting sent hundreds of miles away and there was a pretty good chance they would get killed?
Right. It was, you know, something that their families had to remember them by and whatnot.
Yeah. Embalming is kind of the flip side of that. Formaldehyde, which is the chemical we use to embalm people today, was discovered in 1867 by a German chemist named August Wilhelm von Hoffmann.
Was he German?
Very strong name. So it was the culmination of a lot of scientists who were trying to figure out more and more about how veins worked and how blood flow worked within the body. And usually they kind of tried to make discoveries about blood flow by filling a corpse with, like, colored dye and then doing CPR on it. Like, doing chest compressions.
Yeah.
And seeing where the dye would, like, squirt out at. Like, they would cut open your palms and feet and inject dye into your feet and see if it could make it all the way up to your hands. Which is very silly.
It sounded kind of fun.
Yeah. Just doing, like, CPR on a guy and shooting blood everywhere. But, you know, let's say that you're a Civil War timey guy in the 1860s and you're living very far north up in Maine.
Okay.
Your son goes off to fight in the Civil War and gets killed very far south in Georgia.
It's a long way.
You have a lot of money, so you arrange to have your son's body shipped back to Maine for a proper funeral.
Hell yeah. I'm rich.
The only problem is that a train car full of bodies is kind of the worst possible place to keep a body if you don't want it to decompose.
Does it decompose at a faster rate if it's with other bodies?
It's very hot. They're very hot.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's kind of stinky. Mm-hmm. They're kind of jostling around a lot.
Yeah, they're kind of incubating in there.
Yeah, just not a great look. But luckily for you, formaldehyde has just been discovered.
Nice.
And so this is when the process of arterial embalming really takes off. And that's where the blood in the body is drained and formaldehyde and other chemicals are injected, which allows the body to be preserved. So this happened a lot during the Civil War when young men from either the South or the North would get killed in either the North or the South, and their bodies would have to be shipped back. But you don't want to, like, drop someone's body off with their family and be like, here you go. And it's just like a liquefied...
It's kind of a puddle.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Ugh.
So the process of arterial embalming, minus a few, like, technical tweaks, has largely remained the same since the 1860s. And, you know, we're about to do a little walkthrough on how the process works. But before we do, we should point out that as death positive podcasters, this is not what we want to happen with our bodies, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. As we read, just take note of how mechanical and weird it all sounds. And this isn't like a slam on people who do this. If you're a morgue technician, the technical work that you have to do here is really impressive.
Yeah.
It's just not really my cup of tea. It feels really strange and foreign.
It kind of seems like my impression is kind of like we kind of need to use gasoline to run our cars. It's just like the industry is built around it. And uh-huh. It's kind of an unavoidable, nasty process that it will take systemic change. And I think embalming is one of those things where it's like there's a lot of negative about it. But, you know, it does help us to have the funeral ceremonies that we do and viewings and whatnot. I can see how it's a necessary part of having closure with a loved one dying. And I don't want it to happen to me, but I say that recognizing that it's sacrificing some things that are status quo about funerals and how we handle dead bodies. And some of that is probably good, you know?
That's fair.
Yeah. Now, with that said, let's rip into this shit.
Really tear it apart.
Let's really roast this process. First, rigor mortis is relieved by massage. Sometimes tendons or muscles must be cut for a more natural pose if limbs are distorted by disease, such as arthritis. After that, facial features are set by putting cotton in the nose, eye caps below the eyelids, and a mouth former in the mouth, with cotton or gauze in the throat to absorb purging fluids. The mouth is then tied shut with wire or sutures. Glue may be used on the eyelids or lips to keep them closed in an appropriate pose. Arterial embalming is begun by injecting embalming fluid into an artery while blood is drained from a nearby vein or from the heart. The 2 gallons or so needed is usually a mixture of formaldehyde or other chemical and water. Other chemicals are also injected by syringe into other areas of the body. A troker, a long pointed metal tube attached to a suction hose, is inserted close to the navel. The embalmer uses it to puncture the stomach, bladder, large intestines, and lungs. Gas and body fluids are withdrawn before cavity fluid, a stronger chemical mix, is injected into the torso.
So this is where, I didn't write it in the notes, but this is where a technician who's working on the body is going to have to remove some waste.
Some waste?
Yeah, that's what that big suction hose is used for.
Sucks out the poop.
Yep. And just the stomach stuff and... That's uh-huh. why bodies these days, you just don't have 138 melon seeds found in them.
Yeah, that was pleasant by comparison.
It kind of does sound like you're doing some work on like a car, you know?
Yeah, there's tubes and draining.
But like you said, without doing this process, it would be really tough to, you know, like have an open casket at a funeral, and that's something that a lot of people like for closure. So
yeah, there is definitely a part of this process that's very respectable. It takes a lot of skill to do this, and
oh absolutely,
especially to make someone look relatively lifelike. Yeah. After doing all of this stuff specifically to the face, I think that's crazy that they literally have to shove, like, they put in eye caps and they have to put gauze to yeah. prevent fluid from busting out of there and sew the mouth shut. It's very hard to do all of that and have a natural looking body. And, you know, morticians do great work.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Occasionally you'll see like mortician memes pop up on the Instagram feed we have.
Yeah.
And it's just like jokes about trying to fit a body into jeans as like arthritis is forcing their limbs to do different things.
Yep.
It's very kind of silly, but I guess you got to have a good sense of humor if you got to do that.
Yeah.
As artful as this process is, it can be pretty dangerous to people, mostly the living ones, because the dead people don't mind having chemicals shot into their veins.
He didn't mind because he was already dead.
Forgot about that. So in 2011, the U.S. National Toxicology Program described formaldehyde as, quote, known to be a human carcinogen.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, I don't think the corpses care that much.
Nah, probably not.
But the threat of exposure to concentrated amounts of formaldehyde is actually so high that a lot of morgue and funeral home workers will have to wear like full body hazmat suits and masks while they're embalming.
That's a good sign. This is healthy stuff.
Yeah. It is kind of silly when you dig into this process and you consider how, I can't even think of a good word to describe it, but how technical the embalming process is. And then when the body is at a funeral, you know, the director is wearing like a suit and tie and everything is very clean mm-hmm. and nice, you know.
Yeah, it's quite a production.
Yeah. I mean, granted, as dangerous as this stuff is for people, it is wonderful if you're a dead person. Where we stand today, funeral technicians are usually pretty aware of how much formaldehyde it takes to preserve a body. They won't just like stick a tube of straight formaldehyde in you and keep for millennia.
Right.
But back in the past, when embalming was just kind of starting to get figured out, doctors didn't know how much it would take. And so they were just pumping corpses full of this stuff. And that leads to some really good stories. We've talked about like communist leaders before. How, like, Lenin and Stalin were preserved.
Yeah.
And how they're just, like, pumped full of chemicals.
Yeah.
So even here in the States, our own leaders have been embalmed like crazy. If you think back to our infamous trains episode.
Oh, yeah.
Which is maybe the goofiest episode we've ever done. Abraham Lincoln, after he was assassinated, had to be transported by train from Washington, D.C., to Springfield, Illinois, where his body was going to be buried. But you know, they stopped a bunch along the way so people could come out and pay respects. They stopped here in Columbus, and Lincoln's body was here.
Woo.
But this kind of constant putting his body on a train and taking the body off, and, you know, it took a super long time. So because it took a long time for the train to get from Washington to Illinois, Lincoln's body had to be embalmed and then re-embalmed and then embalmed again.
Mm.
They had to go through this process quite a bit. That meant that by the time Lincoln was finally buried, there was a significant amount of embalming fluid in him. So Lincoln was buried in 1865. The last time his coffin was opened was 1901, which was 36 years after his death. And this is what people saw when they opened Lincoln's coffin.
A harsh, choking smell arose when the casket was opened. Lincoln was perfectly recognizable, even more than 36 years after his death. His face was a gold color from unhealed bruises, a result of the gunshot wound to the back of his head, which shattered the bones in his face and damaged the tissue as it exited. His hair, beard, and mole were all perfectly preserved, although his eyebrows were gone. His suit was covered with a yellow mold, and his gloves had rotted on his hands. On his chest, they could see some bits of red fabric, remnants of the American flag with which he was buried, which had by then disintegrated.
It's 36 years, which is kind of bonkers.
And a cloth flag deteriorated before he did.
Yeah. So on average now, it usually takes about 8 to 12 years for an embalmed body to fully decompose, which makes it kind of bonkers that Lincoln had made it 36 years and was, like, instantly recognizable.
You overdid it.
Yeah, they put a lot of chemicals in the dude. And this kind of insane amount of body preservation in the early ages of embalming had its pluses sometimes. And what we're going to look at next is the case of Black civil rights leader Medgar Evers. So Evers was assassinated in 1963 by a white supremacist named Byron De La Beckwith. Beckwith was arrested and charged with murder, but since it was the South and it was the 60s, all white juries failed to reach a verdict on two separate occasions. So there were two times when he was brought to trial and they were just like,
Jesus Christ.
And the evidence...
Who can say?
The evidence was also super clear. This is not like a like reasonable doubt thing. This is just people were really racist.
Yeah.
However, Merle Evers, Medgar's wife, is an incredibly smart woman. She's still alive. And she made sure that Medgar's body was embalmed as well as possible. Because she was playing a long game here. So what she did is she waited until a new judge was assigned in the county that Evers had been murdered in. And when there was a new judge, she demanded a retrial. So here's an Associated Press news report from what happened in 1991.
Albany, New York. Civil rights leader Medgar Evers' body was exhumed and secretly re-examined here as prosecutors prepare to try a white supremacist for the third time in his 1963 slaying, officials confirmed Wednesday. Evers' body was exhumed Monday from Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. The body was brought to Albany Medical Center, where Dr. Michael Baden, chief of forensic services for the state police, performed an autopsy. The body was in a well-preserved state, which allowed doctors to produce corroborating evidence linking Beckwith to the murder.
Yeah, because Medgar Evers' body had been embalmed really, really well, they were able to go in and get, like, the rifle. You know that thing on, like, CSI where they go, like, oh, this is the specific, like, pattern on the bullet?
Yeah, enhance.
Yeah, they, like, enhanced Medgar Evers' body. Like, his corpse still had the bullet hole in it. And they were able to get the barrel tracings on the bullet well enough that they could bring new evidence to the trial of this De La Beckwith guy. A new jury found Beckwith guilty of murder and he was given a life sentence in July 1994.
Wow.
Which was more than 30 years after the original assassination.
It should not have taken that long, but that is amazing that embalming, yeah, it made that case.
Yeah. That's kind of a good thing embalming did.
Yeah.
You know. Both those are pretty impressive. You know, embalming a body for more than 30 years and being able to recognize a face or get a gunshot wound from it. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm going to show you next is a photo of a guy who was exhumed almost 200 years after being embalmed, and his death was also solved.
This looks like a guy who got like a cannonball to the eyeball.
Yeah, the photo almost doesn't look real.
Yeah.
So this is a photo from the 1917 exhumation of King Charles XII of Sweden, who was killed in a battle in 1718.
And when did they exhume this corpse?
1917.
Okay.
So 199 years after he had been killed.
Okay. So there's some parts here that are remarkably well preserved. He's got his nose and his lips intact.
Uh-huh.
What happened to his eye here? There is a crater, like a massive crater where his left eye used to be.
That's like his temple. He did get shot.
Okay. So that's the wound.
Uh-huh. So Charles XII was shot during the siege of Frederiksten. But even at the time, people weren't sure if he was shot by the enemy, like you do in a battle, or if he had been killed by one of his own troops. Hmm. Because what he had done is he was like getting ready to pass some legislation that would start taxing wealthy Swedish people at the time. So maybe they hired one of his troops to just kind of just take him out at a close range.
Just crater his head real quick.
A goofy thing I found that kind of compounds the uncertainty of this whole event was testimony from the king's surgeon, whose name was Melchior Newman.
Great name.
Exceptional name. But Newman claimed that in a dream, Charles told him that he wasn't shot by the enemy, but that he was shot by, quote, one who came creeping. And like somehow this was enough to start all these conspiracy theories.
Yeah,
but no one followed up on them till like 200 years later.
Sure.
I mean, they are that is kind of like a Nostradamus thing.
It really is. That's like, amazing.
Was killed by one who came creeping.
One who came creeping.
So Charles was exhumed 199 years after his death, and the bullet hole is still very visible in his head.
I think I see it.
But it's huge. It's like the size of like a golf ball.
It's about a fifth of his head.
So because his body could be faithfully examined by much better trained doctors this time, they were able to conclude the following.
The mortal wounds sustained by the king, with a smaller exit wound than entry wound, would be consistent with being hit by a bullet with a speed not exceeding 150 meters per second. We conclude Charles was killed by stray grapeshot from the nearby forest, not in an act of politically motivated murder.
Hmm. That's pretty cool. So it solved that.
Yeah, figured that out.
I think at this point, I'm turning into a fan of embalming.
I'm pro-embalming.
Are you?
100%. No qualification.
I was going to say, because I'm not. If it can solve a crime, great.
Yeah.
That's very cool. But normally I just don't like the thought of a bunch of chemicals, people having to be exposed to a bunch of chemicals. Luckily, formaldehyde breaks down pretty quickly if it's in soil, so it's not super dangerous to the environment.
Oh, okay.
But still, it's not a great... It's just not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't seem necessary for those of us who will not go out with like a controversial like ending, like a murder death. Or yeah. But you know, if you didn't die of old age or natural causes, then it's like, why do you need formaldehyde? Why do you need preserved? I think the thing that really gets me is you're not only being preserved, your preserved body is also being put inside of a case that's like polyurethane wood,
yeah,
or metal or other things that don't break down, just kind of enveloping it and keeping it incubated, yeah, and like more unable to decompose.
But you're gonna rot anyway, you know, yeah, like it's gonna happen.
You definitely are gonna rot. It's gonna happen.
It's the tagline. Yeah, I think a lot of people think that embalming completely prevents a body from decaying, but it doesn't. It really just lets you have an open casket funeral.
Yeah.
Which, if that is important to you, by all means, I'm not going to yuck any yums, but
it's not for me. I might yuck a yum once or twice. Nah, I promise I won't yuck any yums. But hey, it's cool that there are some helpful applications here for solving crimes.
Yeah. It's good that there's good things about something that we make a lot of fun of.
Yeah. We're still going to roast you, though, embalming.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Max, for this nuanced take on something that we're still kind of uneasy about and don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah.
At least we know more about it. We know both sides. But what do you guys think? We love hearing your thoughts on embalming. Feel free to tell us that we're wrong and embalming's tight. And we're dorks for not liking embalming.
I know we have some like mortuary tech people that listen to the show. Is it weird when you embalm someone?
Yeah, your perspective is going to be an interesting one compared to ours, because yeah, we're definitely looking at this from behind our computer screens, not up yeah, close and personal. Yeah. That would be really interesting to hear about. You can message us on Instagram. Or Twitter. I forgot the name of that one. Instantgram, right?
Instantgram.
That's the one. We're on Instantgram and Twitter at PreDeadBoys. You can electronic mail us.
There we go.
PreDeadBoys@gmail.com. I
didn't realize you turned it into a boomer.
And we're on the Facebook. Just search PreDeadBoys Podcast on the box with the word search and a little magnifying glass on it.
And don't worry, you can type in the box. You don't have to backspace. If you click in it and just start typing,
yes,
it'll just, the words will go in there.
Type in AOL keyword, PreDeadBoys Podcast. if you want to support the podcast, we appreciate it. Tell your friends. Tell them to listen to the show. We don't advertise. It's all word of mouth. We're all buds here. We're all besties. You could also tip us a few bucks at ko-fi.com/PreDeadBoys. And if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, we'll read your review on an episode and thank you profusely for the kind things that you say.
Yeah.
On the note of Apple Podcasts, we want to thank everyone who is responsible for us charting in the history section of Apple Podcasts. So, Max, there's a lot of podcasts, right?
There are.
And there's a lot of history podcasts.
Uh-huh.
Would you say that there's more than 1,000?
Yes.
Like, probably, maybe yeah, many thousands.
Yeah.
Well, in 12 different countries, we are within the top 800 or so podcasts.
That's
under
pretty
the history
cool
section. Yeah, maybe most notable is in Sweden and Hungary, we are in the top 200 history podcasts.
I love the Swedes and the Hungarians, man. I love Paprikash, and I like Passapolo.
I don't know what those things are, but they sound great.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone, I mean, we got people from the States, the UK, Canada, Australia, Germany, South Korea, Singapore.
That's cool.
Like, where are you guys coming from? This is amazing. It was one thing to kind of see like a little dot on our analytics that like someone in those areas are listening to our podcast. It's another thing to realize like there's a lot of people that like it, and it's
yeah,
showing up on the charts.
It's cool.
Fucking yeah, crazy. So thank you guys so much for that. That's really awesome. Also, if you're listening to this, we have already been to the Columbus Podcast Awards.
Yep.
And presumably just mopped the floor. Miraculously started winning awards.
We won the business category.
We started winning awards in categories we weren't nominated in. And they just started making up awards on the spot to give to us. And money started raining from the sky. And Max bought 50 beers.
A lot of beers.
yeah, all of those things obviously definitely happened, but mostly we want to thank people for supporting us to the point that we got nominated.
And yeah, thank
whether,
you.
Whether we won an award or not, I don't know. By this point, you probably know, because we're probably gloating about it on social media.
Or moping.
Hey, it's Dorian here. Just wanted to splice this in real quick. We are not moping. We did win Best Entertainment Podcast in Columbus. So thank you so much to everyone who voted for us and supported us and spread the word about voting. Also, thank you to the Columbus Podcast Awards. It was a really awesome event. It was really cool meeting other podcasters and just having this moment of recognition for all the cool creative work coming out. It was awesome. And we came really close to winning Podcast of the Year as well. So we're going to shoot for getting that next year. We're already excited for the next event. And just thank you for all of your support. Anyway, back to it. Anyway, thank you guys for our just all of the support for the podcast. Everything that you guys do is really fucking sweet.
It means a lot. It's very cool.
Yeah, thanks. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out along with their brand new album at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. Also streaming on Spotify and
Apple Music
and Google Play and whatever you use to listen to music. Look up Brat Curse. Give them a listen. They rock.
Soulseek, LimeWire, BearShare,
ask your local Napster Record store if they stock their record. They do have vinyl. I want to pick that up at some point.
And you can walk like to the end of my street and go to Use Kids.
Yeah, yeah. Use Kids in beautiful Columbus, Ohio.
I don't want to dox myself. You I live just, very far away from Use Kids. I am not doxing myself.
Knock on Max's door. Maybe I'll edit that out. Maybe I won't. Anyway, do you have any parting words before we sign off here?
You know, I'm still not really sold on embalming, but I think it's dope that you can kind of just hang out in a big bottle of brandy and that'll keep your body for a while.
I don't want to be embalmed, but I don't want a green burial or anything really sustainable, Max. Okay. I want to be pickled. I definitely want to be
like
pickled.
Vodka.
Yeah. Put me in a big jar of vinegar with some cucumbers. And every year after my passing, I want you to take a cucumber out after it's become a pickle and to eat it in my memory.
A drink I've been getting really into lately is the Campari.
Okay.
Which is, you know, like Campari is like a liqueur. It's like kind of orange flavored.
Right. Yeah.
And you take like a cheap beer, like a High Life or something like that. And you take like two or three sips from it. And then you just pour in a shot of Campari. And you just drink that and it kicks ass.
Campari.
Yeah.
I am.
So maybe you preserve me in that.
I am simultaneously disappointed in you and proud of you.
It rules.
I love being your friend.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for us. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you are going to rot. It's definitely going to happen. It doesn't matter how much formaldehyde you use. It will happen to you.
Unless you're in that like magic Chinese fluid that they put that one lady in.
Get us the magic Chinese fluid. Love that he's Lord Nelson.
Lord Nelson.
Makes me think of The Simpsons.
Very fancy Nelson months.
Behold, Lord Nelson.